and this is the Breffni Early Show.
Breffni, you come all the way from Ireland for this adventure.
Isn't Breffni Early a real tonic, full of positivity?
It's an amazing story, Breffni, with a wonderful, happy ending.
All of those things on your bucket list though, wouldn't necessarily have led you to do the World Cycle Race.
27 countries, 490 days, 18,000 miles on a bike.
You've decided that's it. You've got to keep giving yourself challenges.
Hi, and welcome to the first video edition of the Breffni Early Show. It's the first time we've actually done this with a proper live camera in the studio. And we're not in my house today. We're in the house and the studio, the fantastic story time set here of my guest today. And of course, every week we look and talk to somebody who is interesting, inspirational, and motivational. And today we have someone who I've been very aware of for a long time because of some of the viral videos that she has put out on YouTube, which is probably one of Ireland's foremost YouTube stars, for want of a better word.
I mean, I'm not going to say no, but nah, I don't know if I go that far.
So it's Claire Cullen, who is better known to most YouTubers as Clissaire.
Yeah, Clissaire, yeah.
Why Clissaire? Let's start with that, first of all.
So this is a story a lot of people ask me about this one, but it's basically that I was in the Gaelcliffe in third year, and my friend Laura was going through like a phase where she said she's really cool. So she came in one day and she had one trouser leg tucked into her sock, and she was like, "What's up, Clissaire?" And that's it. And then because my name is Claire, I've never been given any nickname because everything is longer than Claire. And I was like, at that age, and I was like desperate for a nickname, and I was like, maybe this can be my new nickname. And then I set up a YouTube account to like Philip DeFranco's videos. And I just put in the username Clissaire, and you could never change it.
That kind of sucks.
I know, it's such a terrible story. People get so upset when I tell them.
But it's kind of awesome at the same time. It's amazing how the things you think have absolutely no consequence when you're 15 or 16.
Yeah.
That, like, when you're almost a little bit older than that.
Yeah. But I really liked it then when I got to the stage of creating all my social media because I got the name everywhere.
Yeah, obviously. Because it was different and people were like, oh, what's this?
Yeah, it wasn't taken anywhere.
Well, absolutely. No more than myself with a weird and random name and unique spelling of it. You kind of get ownership of it, which is really, really cool. So anyway, why I asked you to come and have a chat with me on the show is because I followed your progress from a distance, mind you, over the last few years. And you've had a couple of successes in terms of YouTube, in terms of viral videos that have got out there, but the first one that most people would be aware of was Stuff Irish Girls Say.
Oh, are we not allowed curse on your podcast?
Well, we can, but
you'd rather not. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
It's not the word stuff, it's another word that, well, it's shite, Irish Girls Say.
Yeah,
let's call it what it is. So you have been doing it for a while at that stage. Now, before you talk about that video, let's go back to the start. You say you set up a YouTube account purely to like Philip DeFranco's content. At what point did you look at it and say, at what age were you when you looked at it? Because everyone looks at YouTube and think, oh, they're all 15, 16, 17. What age and why did you get involved in creating content on YouTube?
So it was 2 years after I finished college, and I know that because I ran for election in college and then spent a year working as an elected officer in college. So it was after that that I was like really unemployed and I couldn't get a job anywhere. This was like just after the recession, kind of probably a year or two into it, but it was like I couldn't get a journalism job anywhere, which is what my degree was in, because I had no official experience. So it was just a vicious circle. And I was spending a lot of time basically watching YouTube again. That is why I had set up my YouTube channel all those years ago. I had had it at this point for must have been 5 or 6 years. I had it from almost when YouTube first came around. You used to share your one YouTube video on Bebo. Do you remember Bebo?
Oh,
there used
I do.
To be like a HTML player, and it was really complicated to put a YouTube video in that player, but like I figured it out. And you wouldn't change it for months because it was such a pain in the arse to change it. So that's how I discovered Philip DeFranco, and so I just wanted to like his videos. So I had this YouTube channel then for whatever, 5 years or whatever it was, and I was watching a lot of Jenna Marbles because it was around the time she was blown up, and I really, really liked what she was doing, and I was kind of really inspired by it, and I was like, she was the first girl that I was seeing on the internet, like, making sketches and being a comedian, and like, just I was like, oh my god, I really want to try this. Like, I really want to have a go. And my first YouTube video then ever was a response video. Back in the day, response videos, hashtag bring back response videos.
You can still do them if you want.
No, but like the official, like where it used to collate them at the bottom.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You would submit a review video, or a response video to somebody's video, and then they'd have like a bar at the bottom with all the different responses. Like, I'm a big fan of response videos, think they should bring them back. But anyway, my first video was a response video to one of her videos. So her video was what I would have done in Cancun, and it was her trip got cancelled. So basically, it's just the video is her like wearing her bikinis around the house just to get the use of them. And then my video was what I would have done at Oxygen, because I was unemployed and all my friends were at Oxygen and I couldn't afford to go. It was just a video of me basically putting up a tent in my sitting room. And that was how I got started.
And just for comparison purposes, what kind of views or what kind of impact did that have?
I got like 50 views, man. Like, I was like immediately famous. Like 50 views and I was over the moon with it. And after a while, like, took a while. But yeah, that was really good. And then I got, I applied to the next kind of thing I did. I made one or two videos like that. And then I applied to a thing called Tube Trials, which was run by a guy in California. And his name, it was E-Click Nick. And he basically, what he did in his channel was he would get a number of YouTubers from around the world, and every week he'd give them a challenge, and they'd film the challenge and send it back to him, and then he'd get his fans to vote on who should stay in. And it was a game show.
It's classic.
It was really clever as well, because it was really, he was a small YouTuber, like, he had about 1,000 subscribers, but he got such high levels of interaction with this. Like, looking back in it now as a YouTube ambassador, it's the kind of thing that
it's early collaborations, basically.
Yeah, and it's the kind of like thing you would bring up as like best practice for a small YouTuber, like, look what this dude did, like, amazing, like, you know. And because I think James Mitchell did it first, and he was the one who told me about it, and then I applied for it, but like people from all around the world were applying for the thing. Like, this guy with 1,000 subscribers, like, he just had this amazing show and we all wanted to be part of it. It was just real OG YouTube, like, yeah, back in the day. And so anyway, I was on that and I ended up winning that. And that's how I basically was a big learning curve. So I was trying to keep up with everyone else. And that's how I kind of honed my craft, I guess you could say. And then I went back to my own channel, and that's when I put up Shout Irish Girls Day.
So you weren't actually putting stuff on your own channel that whole period?
No, I was focusing on getting his one video out a week. Like, I have videos on my channel. I actually don't know how many. I think it's only a handful before Shout Irish Girls Day, because I was focusing on getting this challenge and doing it properly every week, and getting it over to E-Click Nick to try and win the competition. Very competitive.
What did you get for winning the competition?
I think I got a $250 Amazon gift card, which is pretty good.
It's not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty good, because all his prizes as well were crowdfunded.
Okay, so
yeah,
the
it's amazing.
Oh, I like that idea. So basically, his audience created the content and created the funding for it.
Yeah, as far as I remember, I don't think Kim had
his own
product. I think he works for a YouTube company, I think.
Okay.
So he used to work for Maker. I don't think he works for Maker anymore. But no, yeah, he's very successful now behind the scenes, producing, kind of working with YouTube companies. But he actually got pinged on that channel for monetization, and it got removed years and years ago. So
because he used other people's content?
No, because there used to be this thing, and it's the only reason why I'm in a network, is because I was told that networks protect you from it. But like, someone could bot you and like send a load of people to click, or a load of fake traffic that clicks your ads or whatever, and then if the minute YouTube saw like suspicious activity, they just delete button immediately, and there's no at that time there was no comeback. So I think it's different now, whatever way they're working it, you're allowed, they're actually the ones taking the monetization off now, and you're allowed to request a review. But back then, like, it was see you later. So he was actually one of two people that I knew him personally, and then the other guy I loved and I followed online, he was called Pleated Jeans. He also got pinged and had to start a new channel.
That's kind of sucky when you've put so much time in it.
Yeah, I know. But it all worked out anyway for Nick, because he's got a good job now.
Well, a good job in his parents' eyes, at least. Because that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
I do. Because I don't have a traditional 9-to-5 job, and so you do. Did you always have the 9-to-5 job? Well,
yes.
Before we get on to that, let's talk about Shite Irish Girls Say.
Okay.
So, from conception right through to, I suppose, now, what's been the story of that video? Because that's probably the thing, other than Donald Trump, which we'll talk about in a minute. You're also best known probably for that, so.
Oh, I'd definitely be best known in Ireland for Child Irish Kirsty. Yeah. So like the Donald Trump video got me a lot of American followers, but no, Child Irish Kirsty is like, and people still recognise me from it. Like, takes them a minute. Sometimes yes. They're like, do I know you from somewhere?
But
like,
you have.
I don't think we've met.
But from that video, you must have people who feel they know you almost.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because you've shared a lot of your life on YouTube for the last.
Yeah, well,
six,
yeah,
years.
And especially in the last couple of years, I've been doing vlogs as well, so I've been real personal stuff, and I managed to get the Rupti fiance into it eventually, and yeah, so people real. There's a lot of people really invested in my actual life now, as well as the comedy stuff, and then there's people who only care about the comedy stuff.
So Short Irish Girl Say.
Yeah.
So tell us about where the idea came from, first of all.
So it was actually.
You can tell us your story.
It was like a meme.
James Cameron.
It was like a meme.
Okay.
So there was this video that went up, and it was called Shit Girls Say.
Yeah.
And it was a guy in drag, like he was just dressed up as a girl, and he was saying things that girls say, like he was going, oh, I'm too hot, I'm too cold. And that went super viral, and it got like millions and millions of hits, and then everybody started to make versions of it. So I watched Shit Girls Say 1, 2 and 3, then I watched like, sorry, I'm going to say shit a lot in
this
sequence.
That's fine.
Then I watched like Shit White Girls Say to Black Girls, which got 10 million views. Shit Christian Girls Say to Atheist Girls. Like, it just went on and on and on. It was like, so everybody was doing their own versions. There was like a Shit Asian Girls Say, Shit, like, from wherever you were from.
Yeah.
And I was looking at this and I was like, I want to make one of these, and but I don't, what's my unique perspective? And I was like, would I do like Shit Girls in Relationships Say? And I was like, ugh, that's boring. And then I was thinking about it, and it kind of hit me, because I think somebody asked me to explain something I said, and it hit me how much slang I used, and how, like, because I was living
in... We all use, yeah.
But because I was living in Dublin, and because I was from Mayo, I had, like, this weird mix of the two, and I was like, oh my god, actually, I could do Shit Irish Girl Say, and I could try take, like, the slang that I've heard and the phrases from Dublin and from Mayo and try and make it as relevant, I guess, as possible to as many people as possible. And I was even kind of thinking at the time, I was like, this might be only like a joke that I get, I don't know, but I'll try it. And I mean, particularly when I was like, there had one or two lines in it. A line that I almost took out of it was where I'm driving the car and I shout at someone and I'm like, indicators! And I almost took that out because I was like, that's only me. No one else roars that at somebody else going around and about. And I was like, I better take that out. And then I ended up not taking it out, and it actually is one of the most commented on moments in the video. People are like, I shout that at people all the time. So yeah, you think you're a unique snowflake and you're not.
Life's very depressing when you realise you've had the same experience as everybody else. So obviously that was huge success. So you created it, you put it on YouTube. When did it start to blow up? What can you pinpoint?
Immediately. So I basically had this in my head that I should have uploaded it at midnight. I don't know why. And so I uploaded it at midnight on Sunday night, and then I shared it on my Facebook page, and then all of my friends started sharing it. And I went to bed after, and like a good few people had shared it before I went to bed, but I was like, cool, my friends are sharing, because your friends are always going to support what you do. And then I woke up at, I think it was like, I woke up at a normal-ish time. I think Alex was going to work, so it must have been like 8. And then I had loads of text messages, and I had still had a thing on my phone that said whenever somebody subscribed to me, I got an email. So I had like 75 emails, and then I had a little text message being like, you were on the radio this morning. And I was like, what? And I had like a load of messages on, I think it was YouTube Messenger back in the day. From people who worked in radio who wanted to talk to me. So it was Today FM, I remember, that I was on. I want to say it was Tony Fenton, but I cannot for the life of me remember, but it was definitely Today FM. I think it was Tony Fenton. And it was like really exciting to be on the radio or whatever and just talk about this video. And then he played the video on the radio, which was like, I was like, oh my god. Like, he cut out the bits where I cursed, but they played an edited together version, which is hilarious because like the quality wasn't amazing. And then, but it, as well, 6 years ago, it was like, it didn't have to be that good. Like, do you know what I mean? It, as long as it was funny, people didn't really care, but like now people really care about the quality. Of the sound and all that, but I was just doing it on like a cheap handy cam, like, yeah. So that, oh, and then it was in the paper, and then yeah, it just kind of It was mad. It was just a mad 2 weeks. And it was like my phone was constantly buzzing. And I had to turn off the like subscriber notifications, because I remember I was getting all the emails that said how many subscribers I got. And then that day, that morning, I was on the radio with Today FM. And then that evening, I was going to my mother's month's mind. And I came out. I know. And then I came out, and like, again, I had like, at that point, I had hundreds of messages being like, this person subscribed to you, this person subscribed to you. And I was like, this is really going mental. Like.
So how many subscribers did you have when you put it up there? Did you have 1,000?
120.
120. And when the dust settled in a week or two, or even a bit later, where did you finish up?
I had 700,000 views on the video, and I had 2,500 subscribers, which it doesn't sound like much, but it was that's a huge jump. The
yeah.
first 1,000 are the absolute hardest to get, and I had just blown past the hard bit, and I was, you know, and it was amazing. I was like over the moon with it. Yeah.
Did you have it monetized?
No, because I wasn't partnered. Back in that day, you used to have to be partnered with YouTube. So after about 200,000 views, because they could obviously tell it was going viral, they monetized it then, but I missed out on the key kind of first 200,000, which would have been really concentrated in a short period of time and from all over the world. So that's, I missed out on the reel, but it did kind of give me a bit of money here and there every month for quite some time, because it was kind of rolling forever. So it's on 1.6 million now. So it shot up to 700, and then it sort of just rolled constantly.
And did you think, I suppose, the dream of kind of, oh, I've hit it big, I'm now a YouTube sensation, and did your ego at any point kick in and you kind of said, okay, now that's it, I can, don't have to worry about work, I'm gonna just sit back and make YouTube videos? Because that's what people tell you, like, it's not the reality of it, but it's, you hear of one or two people, or even of 500 people across the world who do it, but then there's millions trying. How did that ever cross your mind, or was that?
I would have loved to make it my full-time job, but like, I definitely didn't jump on it enough, because I didn't know how to leverage that for the long term. So it was viral, amazing, so exciting, like amazing 2 or 3 weeks, and then it all dies down. And I remember saying at the time, I was like, this is my 15 minutes, like I knew that it wasn't going to last, but I didn't know how to leverage it. Like, I feel like since, anytime I've had like a viral video since, whether it be on Facebook or Vine or whatever, I've known better how to leverage it to keep going. And at the same time, it's not guaranteed either, but at least I knew how to try and get it to kind of keep going. And how to follow up to it. So I think I didn't have a video like scheduled for the next week, and because I wasn't on a regular schedule, as I said, I just came back from kind of tube trials and put this video up, and so I wasn't ready to make it into a regular thing. I hadn't put a call out at the end to tell people that I made them regularly, because I didn't, and I didn't, you know, have a decent enough follow up for people either. So what I should have done was really put up a video quickly, another video quickly, so people watch more stuff, because there wasn't barely anything on my channel at the time. It was 4 or 5 videos, and they weren't very good.
Yeah.
And then,
which obviously is going to turn off a potential subscriber.
Exactly, because they're like, oh, it's just a viral. Like, this
yeah.
person has no other content I'm interested in, and they don't seem to be posting regularly, and et cetera, et cetera. So at least on that side, if I was to go viral tomorrow, people would see a body of work and see in my header on my social media that I post regularly, and they might be more inclined to subscribe. So I don't feel like I ever went, oh, job done, this is my job now forever. I kind of knew that it was short-lived. And I did keep making videos, and I did want, like, from the start, I wanted to hit 100,000 subscribers. Like, do you know what I mean? That was my goal. But I knew it wasn't going to be easy. And
did you think you'd have made it by now?
I did think I would have made it by now. I'm doing it about 6 years now. So I kind of thought that if it was going to happen, it would have happened by now, if you know what I mean. I also didn't think I was going to be doing this long either. I kind of thought that I was going to do it for a few years for fun and then see where it took me. Either be a big YouTuber or do something else.
But you are a big YouTuber, and like, that's, you're comparing, if you compare yourself to the Zoellas of this world who have millions,
yeah.
fair enough, but they're the exception rather than the rule. Like, the average YouTuber has less than nearly 200 subscribers, or
I suppose, you know, like, yeah, it's just such a thing of the glass half empty or half full.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be looking at like Jacksepticeye and be like, no, I'm tiny compared to Jacksepticeye, and yeah, I suppose I
yeah, but
to,
people
need to remember that I have actually amassed a decent enough following
yeah.
for kind of. And I do love making them, I must say. And I really like when I make something and then people like have a reaction to it. whether it be good or bad, I obviously prefer the good reactions, but like, I just like when people really engage with it.
Because that was my next question, was like, in terms of actually making the content, because sometimes, even I'm only at this a wet week, but in terms of actually making content, it can be just troublesome to fit it in around your normal everyday life, whether it's work or relationships or friends or whatever.
Yeah.
How do you manage to do that on a consistent basis over so long?
I remember I used to say that when I first started YouTube, the two things I used to sacrifice were my social life and my sleep. In particular, my social life. I used to just make videos all the time, and that was all I was interested in. And then once I started working full time, and actually I got my first full time gig off the back of what I built on my YouTube channel. I think I built it to 19,000 subscribers, and in Sydney, a social media company gave me a job after that. Cool. They were like, wow, you did that with no budget. Here, come in and be a trainee social media manager. And then they trained me up and I moved up, and then I came back to Ireland and I ended up working social media full time. And so once I started working then full time, what I sacrificed was sleep and social life. And then I think in the last year or so, it's been the hardest, arguably, I'd say, for me to make stuff, because not only am I getting older, I'm like, I kind of feel like I'm like getting too old for YouTube because everyone's really young on it. But also I've gotten really into like sport, and like playing tag rugby is one thing I particularly love doing, and it's been really good for me and my mental health and like all that. It's just really made me a lot happier, and kind of can get out there and just like kick a ball around and get all my frustrations out. So that leaves me even less time then, because I used to come home from work and go straight to editing, and just that was it. And like, I used to do it on the couch with a laptop, so I'd be spending time with my boyfriend. Do you know what I mean?
So he's on the couch watching TV.
He's watching sport, yeah. And yeah, actually that worked out fine for him as well. But yes, and now I like to play a lot of sports, so I have less time. So I'd say arguably the last year or so has probably been the hardest in terms of keeping it regular. But I'm still there, and I still have things I want to say and videos I want to make, so I'm not ready to give it up. I'm basically, as I get older and as I have other hobbies, I'm trying to figure out how to make it all work. And like, 6 years in, I can't sacrifice my social life or my sleep as much as I used to, because I want to see my friends, and I also, like, I'm getting old, I want to sleep.
What happens, like, I know you're engaged, you get married, maybe a baby or two come along, maybe, I don't know, I'm not going to preempt your future, but like, where's the end game? Like, do you see YouTube becoming a family thing, or is it a thing that it's got a lifespan and you see it maybe fizzling out at some stage, or just a definite stop, or have you even thought about that?
Well, I totally have, because I mean, my goal has always been to get to 100,000 subscribers, and then, but like, if I'm honest with myself, I'm like, but if I got to 100,000 subscribers, like, why would I stop? Why would I be like, okay, I'm done now?
Yeah, no, it's like, 100,000, thanks, see you, bye.
No, I'd be like more like pumped to make stuff, to be like, oh, I'm 100,000 subscribers, oh my god, like, now I'm to make, like, now I need to keep going and see how I'm more.
People love me, you really love me.
Exactly. So I really don't know. Now I work full time in another YouTube channel, which was the dream. Do you know what I mean? So technically I've kind of already achieved, like, I'm working full time for a YouTube channel, so I get to have fun all day every day and make YouTube videos. So you could argue that I'm getting all my creative energy out at work, and like, I'm doing what I wanted to do, and actually been able to live off it, because it's like an actual salary job. But yeah, I'm not ready to give it up, but it will be something that we'll have to talk about, myself and the fiancé, when we have kids, because I don't know how, I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I know that there are very successful family vlogging channels out there. I find vlogging a lot of hard work. So, like, regular vlogging, like making sketches and stuff is hard work, but it's isolated, like it's an hour here, 2 hours, 3 hours there, whereas vlogging is every day, and you are recording your life, which is the easy part, but it's the editing then every night, a couple of hours.
I'm on day 37 and I'm feeling the pain already.
I did a 30 day challenger for vlogmas a couple of times, and I think I succeeded once. I think I've done it 2 years, and then 1 year I totally failed, and then I tried Vida as well, which is vlog every day in April. So I've actually tried a couple of times and failed all bar one, because it is a lot of work, and Yeah, so I'm, and also I kind of want, people leave a lot of comments on my videos and they're like, new kids are going to be so embarrassed when they see these videos and they're older, and they probably will, and I don't care about that.
It's not a parent's job to embarrass their kids.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to be like putting it on at their 18, be like, wait till you see this video. It's about things Irish girls say. But I don't know if I want them to grow into a presence that's been created for them. Like, I don't mind embarrassing them in my videos, but I feel like me and himself would need to sit down and figure out if we want to, like,
document your kids' lives.
Document your kids' life, and then they've grown, they grow up, and then their life is already on the internet, but we haven't asked their permission. It's just, we've just done it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not ragging on family vloggers. I really like them, and I watch quite a lot of them.
That's the new headline for the
I'll pick
the most popular family vlogger I can find in the city. It's aimed specifically
at them. Sure, the second one, Jolie's the Irish ones. Do you know what I'm sure they're ragging on the
There's my headline. There's my headline.
I actually like them as well. But yeah, I just don't know.
I'll let that be.
Yeah. No, really, if you want. But
a bit of what you like in them.
Oh, right. Yeah, it wouldn't be editing.
No, it's definitely going to a tweet, that's all I'm saying.
Amazing. Yeah, no, I don't know, to be honest. And basically what I'm going to do now is I'm going to, because I mentioned to you off the podcast that I actually noticed my audience is growing with me, and I dived into my analytics, the majority is actually now between 24 and 35. Which is really good news to me, because I'm getting older and my content is getting more, like, it's getting less slapstick, and it's getting, in some cases it's quite political, because I care about stuff and I want to make a joke about things I care about, and I try to be a bit, I guess, cleverer, I suppose, in the way I write a sketch now. I'm trying to, like, make a point, or, like, you know, satire or whatever. It's not kind of just this sketch of 10 sayings put together, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just because I've evolved and my content's evolving with me, so it's really exciting that some of my audience are going with me as well. So I am going to experiment and maybe try some, like, wedding content and stuff about things that are relevant to me in my life now, and the age that I am, and see how they do. And then, yeah. See where it goes from there, because you can't, people, some people still do say, like, I miss your old sketches, but, like, you can't be making the same stuff forever. Yeah.
You can always go back and do the odd occasional one if you choose.
Yeah, but it's actually never going to come out the same. Do you know what I mean? Because it's going to be
different stage of life.
And you're a totally different person, and it's going to be this carbon. It's just going to be a copy of, like, a second rate copy of what you originally did, with the purest of kind of in the moment.
Different things work differently in different stages of life as well.
Yeah.
Let's talk Trump before we get to your jumper, right? I know. So we talk about one viral video, another one that went particularly well for you on
Facebook.
Well or good or bad or however you want to look at it. It went huge.
Yeah.
To use one of Trumpisms. So you had this huge video last year when it was Trump was just beginning to hot up in the primaries in the US. You did a video about him. What happened?
So I think what happened first was I did this video, it was coming up to Paddy's Day, and I did this video in the Irish language that was basically, it had subtitles, and it was basically saying, don't call it Paddy's Day. And then that went viral, and I think it got 3 million views on Facebook, and I was like, right, now I need a follow up, and it's all Americans watching this, like, and they're all giving out about me saying don't call it Paddy's Day, because it's Americans that call it Paddy's Day. And I was like, okay. And then I had this idea for this Donald Trump sketch, and I was like, oh, bingo, that's what I'm going to do. So I did this Donald Trump sketch, which was where I'm wearing a green jumper, like, real kind of cliche, and I'm like, I'm pretending to be Ireland, talking to America as if America's my mate, and I'm the one that's been nominated from the group to, like, break it to her that, like, everyone hates her boyfriend, Donald Trump. So it's like, I just don't think he's the one for you. I think, you know, if you're torn between two or whatever. And I didn't really even mention Hillary, but it was basically just like, Donald's really, he's not very nice to you, and, you know, he's really racist, he's got tiny hands. And I thought it was very funny, and a lot of people agreed with me, but also a lot of people were really mad, and a lot of Trump supporters are very mad. And I had 10,000 followers on my Facebook page at the time. And then between those two videos, I ended up with 44,000 or 40,000. And then, so a good portion of those, a lot of them followed me on Facebook because they liked my stuff or they got my sense of humor or whatever. But then like, a couple of thousand followed me because they were Trump fans and they were really, really mad that I slagged off Donald Trump. And then, yeah, for months and months afterwards, and still even, I still get the odd one to this day, but they just sort of wrote really mean things about me on every video I did after that.
Every video, whether it's
yeah,
America or not.
Oh, yeah. And like, I didn't go flat out to, you know what I mean? I did like one follow up, I think, to the Trump one to kind of get a bit of traction later on, months later, on Facebook. And other than that, oh, and I did one around the time of the French election as well, but like, that's over the course of a year, I did about three in the same vein. And the rest of them were my normal, like, videos, and they were just writing really mean stuff about me on them, like, and just kind of like, well, apart from the fact that they were like, they were insulting my looks or whatever, they'd say things like, oh, shut up, like, you know, your opinion means nothing and all this. And it was just like, but eventually then other people would jump in and be like, why are you here? Like,
yeah, you can't unlike
yeah.
the page.
So
yeah.
I would just kind of let people fight it out in the comments and like all my supporters' comments.
Do you read all the comments?
I do, yeah, to my detriment. Jesus.
Should you read all the comments?
No, because it would give you a hernia. Yeah, no, it can get really on top of you. There's been a couple of times in my YouTube career that it has really like depressed me. Not to throw the word around, but no, I mean, like, it's just really brought me down. And in those instances, what I do then is I have to make a joke out of it, and that's actually how I deal with stuff. It's probably why I'm doing this whole thing in the first place. So the first time I remember, I was making content for a gaming channel, which was trying to change itself into an entertainment channel, and it already had 100,000 subscribers. And I now know with my experience that that's a terrible idea.
It's a shocking
people
idea.
People subscribed for one thing,
yeah,
and get really angry when you try to change it. But I did, it was that this is at the start, and just after kind of shout out to Chris saying I didn't know all this. So I was making entertainment content for this gaming channel, and people were really mad. And they used to leave me the most horrible, like, abusive comments, and like a lot of things, like, for example, one of them was, you deserve a stint in the rape dungeon, and like, it was, that's like the most PC one I can think of. And
God.
It was just like, it was really, really intense. And then what I did was I took the worst comments, like the ones that you were like, you wouldn't really want to repeat, and then I made this sketch of like, what if a total, I was like, these people are total strangers saying these things to me on the internet, what if they came up and said it to my face? And so I did this sketch of total strangers walking up to me saying these really like vile things, and me just kind of going like blinking in shock. And I really enjoyed making that. So that was my I think it's called YouTube comments in real life. It's years ago now, but that was that's one of my favorite videos, and that really helped me then deal with it. And then after that, I was like, oh, it's ridiculous now. So what didn't bother me then again for ages. And the next time, around the time the Trump guys were kind of, or the fans were kind of getting to me, I went out onto Grafton Street in Ireland, because I was back living in Ireland at this point, and I stopped total strangers, and I was like, sorry, would you actually read this comment to me? It's a real YouTube comment I got on my YouTube channel. Would you just read it out to me? And I got them to read me, like, again, really terrible, like.
And what was the reaction like when you had someone who's never met you and may or may not recognize you and say, here, can you just read this on camera for me? Because you could paint that. Like, people are so paranoid now that they think, oh, well, this is going to be used against me in some respects.
Yeah.
How did you get people to actually do that?
I suppose I don't stop people on the street as much anymore because of all the prank videos and everything. It's not, but I think this was about a year and a half ago, and I went out with a couple of friends, and we basically just stopped people, and I totally explained the video to them. I was like, listen, I have a YouTube channel, and I get some like outrageous comments on my YouTube channel. I just thought it would be really funny if total strangers would read them to me. And I was just wondering, all I want you to do is like read them to me, and then it's just going to be kind of, I explained, like, it's just going to be a cut of all these different people reading all these different comments, and that's it. And then some people said they didn't want to be in it, and that was fine. And then most people were like, actually, yeah, it's kind of sounds kind of fun, like. So they did it, and I don't think
insulting
they were
insulting people to their face.
Yeah, so it was like,
I suppose it's not
just
their thoughts, it's just the words.
Yeah, yeah. But I didn't tell them what the comments were beforehand, though, so I just like hand them the phone. So some of them were quite surprised by like what exactly they had to say. Yeah, but everyone seemed to have good fun, and a lot of people, some of the people that were in it then found it when it was uploaded, because I was like, here, search it, it'll be called this or whatever, and they said it was very funny. And yeah, so I used to do a series called Dear Claire, and that's the only one I ever had a problem with. One person complained that she was like, I didn't want to be in this, because she was kind of in the background.
Okay.
And that was it, because there is a certain law just to get around, not to sound too sneaky or anything, but if you're caring about your business in public, in a public space, you are totally fine to be in the background or to be filmed.
But if you're
in a private area, then no. Do you know what I mean? So there's like, I do have a journalism degree, so I did know the kind of differences of where I could and couldn't film.
Yeah.
And what I could and couldn't do. But yeah, so I've only ever had one issue with that. But I remember I had one video that was where I was interviewing people on the street, and it was called Innuendo Interviews. I just wished, like it was at the very start, and I wish my equipment had been better, because it is such a funny video, I really love it. But I was, yeah, basically interviewing people and making really innuendo-y comments, and they would answer the question properly, and they didn't understand, because it was all magic in the edit, really. But that was one of my favourite videos. But I did, for that one, get people to sign a consent form.
because
even though it was like just a consent form that I hand wrote out and got them to sign it, but just in case.
It's still their signature.
Yeah.
You're very vocal about Gaeilge.
Yes.
The Cuid Gaeilge, Irish language. And a lot of your content either is in or refers to Irish.
Yeah, it's kind of one of my most popular genres of content on my channel now at the minute. Yeah.
And how do you find that works in terms of people actually engaging with it? Do you get comments back in Irish, or is it English about the Irish, or is it pro or against?
People really love the Irish content, and there's a lot of comments in English from, there's like Americans, a lot of them will be like, Irish is a language? ? And then there'll be a lot of people who are commenting saying things like, God, I've lost my Irish, but I love it, and or I'm so surprised with how much I understood, and this is brilliant, make more, or whatever. But then there are people who comment in Irish. It's a much smaller percentage.
And they're Nazis about...
No, some of them are fine. And then some of them are like, oh, you know, you said this wrong, you said that wrong. The worst is when people comment in English to correct my Irish. That really annoys me. Because it's like, they won't even type it in Irish. Like, fair enough if you're correcting me in Irish.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I gotta give you props, because it's like, you're actually using Irish, yeah, and you're correcting me. Fair enough. But if you're like in English writing, you're pronouncing that wrong. Like... says you in English.
I think for me, the Irish language, I have a bit of a growl for it as well. I don't use it nearly as much as I should, but I do have a bit of a bugbear when people who are trying to promote the Irish language and you're making an effort and they correct you. I remember being in a conversation with someone who worked in an Irish industry promoting Irish, and I was made an effort because I knew where they worked and I knew their background, and I said, I made an effort to speak in Irish, and every second sentence they'd pull me up on something.
But like, you don't do that with English speakers.
No.
That's what annoys me. Yeah. Like, I don't do that to someone speaking English to me. I don't correct them every 2 seconds.
But rather than the attitude almost being like, oh, fair play to you for making the effort to try Irish, you know, and I'll pull you up on one or two big things, but I'm going to let all the small stuff go. If I can work out what you're trying to say, then I'll go, well, my Irish isn't that bad. I'm not fluent, but I'm...
Yeah.
Yeah, I can hold a conversation-ish. Also, how much of your content now is politically motivated? Like, because I see you're wearing a repeal jumper this evening. I'm guessing that's not by accident. Or is it? Do you wear it every day?
I wear it all the time, yeah.
Okay.
Why wouldn't it be by accident?
No, I just thought you might be wearing it specifically because you're shooting... We shot an episode of your podcast today.
Oh, yeah. I've worn it in a couple of my podcasts already. Yeah. No, I am not... I love this jumper, first of all. But, you know, I'd say probably a lot of my content is, as you put it, politically motivated. But it's because as I get older as well, I'm like, I'm very into these things and I'm very aware of these issues, and I like to make content around things that you know, make me passionate or enrage me or whatever. So a lot of it ends up, like, for example, a non-political example is that I made a video about how Irish car insurance works, because I was really, really mad when I got a quote and it went up 250 euro for no reason. So I made this video about how, like, you're ringing for a quote and they're throwing a dart at a dartboard to figure out what price your car should be. So they're like, oh, what litre is it? And then they just throw a dart at a dartboard. I do that with everything. It's things that I care about or that I'm thinking about. And yeah, a lot of that in the last few years, I guess, has been political. I try, I guess, to make a joke of it or do it in a way. I do now, and I have a couple of videos on my channel talking about politics, just talking. Now, it's in the style of a YouTuber rant, do you know what I mean? I don't sit down and and lecture people, because people won't watch that. So I have a couple of videos. I think one was on the marriage equality referendum, where it was basically calling out all of the lies that I saw as lies and being peddled around, and it was real passionate and real, like, you guys need to cop on. And then I had a video about, it was a general election one time, and I was reading,
they have one in the movie every
so often. Yeah. Yeah, but this particular one really enraged me because Paul Murphy was running, and don't be starting on Paul Murphy, but he had this leaflet.
Paul Murphy, he did the music videos after he left politics.
I don't think he's left politics. He's the water charges dude that locked Joan Brittany.
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking of one of the...
But he for this election anyway, he had all these, like, achievements or, like, all these things he was going to do when he was elected. He was trying to get elected to the European Parliament, and he was, like, all of these, like, really local issues he was going to deal with.
And he was
going to
solve them in Europe.
In Europe. Okay, like, and I was like, oh, yeah, so he's going to fix water charges in Europe, is he? Like, that makes no sense. So it's a real rant video. So I have done... I think it's 3 videos in that style where I'm seriously talking about something and I'm tearing it apart, but, like, in a ranty style. But then the rest of the time I try to do, like, satirical sketches and stuff. So I have never done a serious abortion video about my feelings on abortion and the repeal movement on my channel yet, but I am planning on doing one because I think it's really important, and it's really important to me.
Well, Leo has said that there'll be a referendum next year, so...
Yeah, Leo says a lot of things, but I believe when I say it. But it's good news. I'm not saying it's not good news, but I also have a lot of feelings about whether or not it should even be a referendum. I kind of agree with the committee's recommendations that it be legislated for through the Oireachtas, like, that's what they're there for. And I feel like...
I'm getting the sense that you don't necessarily trust the Oireachtas to do that, though.
No, well, I think opening it... I mean, yeah, no, no is the answer, but... opening it up to a referendum, you have to be very careful about how it's worded, and then we're going to see a lot of horrible stuff like we saw during the gay marriage referendum, and, like, a lot of lies, a lot of outright lies, and a lot, there's going to be so many pictures of baby fetuses everywhere. It's just horrendous. Like, I have a lot of feelings about that, and I think I'm going to make a video about it. But the only one I made so far was, I got this insane comment on one of my videos that was like, 7 questions pro-choice advocates cannot or will not answer. And, like, it was just the most insane. One of them was like, has a woman ever given birth to anything that wasn't a baby? So I took this comment that was just mental. Like, it was just, the person was just mental. Okay. It had to be. Well, because it made no sense. Like, maybe they were drunk when they wrote it or something, but it just made no sense. Like, the first question was, if you were driving on the road and there was a jacket on the road and you weren't sure was there a body underneath it, would you stop or not? And, like, so this whole comment anyway, I just made a really jokey response to it. So I was like, oh, it depends whether there's a nice jacket. Like, is it from Zara or where is it from? And then on the has a woman given birth to anything that's not a baby question, I Googled it and I found this, like, really dodgy article that was like, woman gives birth to frog. And I was like, yeah, like, look, a woman gave birth to a frog once.
It's on the internet. It must be true.
Yeah, so that's me really taking the mick out of the insane arguments, because I think both sides have insane arguments, but particularly sometimes the pro-life comments I get just make no sense. But yeah, so I've done jokey political stuff and kind of ranty political stuff. Yes, there's a lot of political stuff on my channel, but I care about politics and I care about that sort of stuff. And that it just ends up influencing me in the sketches that I make.
for somebody who's so obviously influenced by comedy and comedy stylings for the last 5 or 6 years in a public forum like YouTube, it's taken you a while to actually get up on stage and do stand-up. So I know, because I watched a video a couple of weeks ago about your first attempt at stand-up. It was quite good. Jeez. Have you watched it since? Because you said you hadn't. Why not?
Because everyone told me I was really good and I don't want to find out that that was a lie.
Would that be you being hypercritical if you do actually end up watching it?
Yeah, possibly. Like, and I just feel like a real cringe. Like, maybe I have actually, and this is an exclusive for your podcast, I've signed up to do it again. So I might have to watch it just to see.
You're going to have to compare it faster.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch it and figure out if I have any tics or if I'm, you know, because another way, sometimes you maybe move your hands too much or you're moving around the stage too much, you're talking too fast. I'm going to have to watch it and see what I do to fix anything that's wrong. But yeah, I'm going to give it another go.
Fair play, because I actually did watch it and I was quite impressed. It was very good. But then, despite it being your first attempt at comedy live, it's not your first attempt at comedy, which probably meant...
But it is
easier.
Very different though, because when you're making sketches, you've huge creative control and you can edit yourself to the, especially on YouTube, because jump cuts are a thing.
Yeah.
So you can cut out 2 seconds of pause or like a half a second of pause to make it more seamless or make it more energetic. And it's a lot, like a lot of the magic on YouTube happens in the edit. So it was scary to be getting up there unedited. That's what was scary. So I practiced that story a lot. And see, and as you saw, it still didn't come off perfect because I hadn't it timed perfectly. Well, I hadn't it timed perfectly, even though I practiced it so much, you know, because you just get nervous and it just kind of,
You can't replicate that experience
from
the stage.
It's not as controlled,
As in your, here in the studio where you kind of take your time and you rush things, you panic through them a little bit just because of the endorphins.
Yeah, and like when I make sketches as well, I don't like people in the same room. So even my fiance, I'd be like, get out, like, you don't see this. And yeah, I don't even let them watch videos till they're done. Like, I don't like people seeing the unfinished product.
So how do you camera them on a practical level? How do you set up, do you like cameras and tripods all over the place or just...
Yeah. So it's different when it's a collab. So me and a couple of my friends doing a video together, because they're all YouTubers and we're all filming each other and we're actually having such banter, like, it's not, that's fine. Again, I don't let them see a half finished edit, but that's fine being in front of the camera, being behind the camera with them. But in terms of like someone who doesn't make videos, like my fiance, I don't like making a video in front of him, say in the same room, because I just feel really self-conscious. I'm kind of trying to get over it because we obviously share a house, so it's just easier if I can do it in a room that he's in. But up until this point, I have been in separate rooms and I've changed the setting, my desired setting, say, for a sketch to the kitchen because he's in the sitting room or whatever. It's a weird one, but it's just, that's why it was so scary for me to get up there and like let people see this sort of, and it was practiced, but it was, you know, very unedited, as I say.
We did talk at the very top of the show about Storytime, which is your new, I suppose, newish initiative, which is your own podcast. It's audio and video, so you can get it on your Storytime video YouTube channel, but also on SoundCloud. I'll put the links in the description and in the program notes on Podomatic. So basically, tell us a little bit about what Storytime is.
So it's the Storytime podcast, and it's basically, I started it because I wanted to get into longer form content, and it didn't really suit my channel as it was, because that, it is what it is. And Storytime is a trend on YouTube. So a lot of YouTubers would make a Storytime video where they basically drag out a story for 20 minutes and try to make it really dramatic. And they're really, really popular. And I was like, I had wanted to start a podcast for about 2 years and I kept coming up with ideas that I was either like, oh, that won't last very long, or I won't be able to keep that up. Or one of them was for me and the fiance to do a podcast, and he didn't really want to do it. He did one pilot episode, audio only, and then he was like, no, I hate it, I'm not doing it anymore. And then I got this idea that I was like, I have lots of stories. I was actually out in the pub, right? And I was
talking
to someone. I was talking to someone and I was talking to a group of friends actually, and I just noticed that all of our communication was based on storytelling, and it's a real Irish thing. Like, I know it's around the world, but I think in particular it's a real Irish thing. It's like all of this, the thing is just you tell a story, and then I'm like, oh, that reminds me of this time that I did this, and then it goes around the circle. And it kind of hit me. I was like, everybody has stories. And then I was like, it was like a light bulb went off. I was like, oh my God, like it could be a storytime podcast, and I could get people on to share their stories, not mine. And it's not driven by me. So yeah. I can't run out of stories because it's not driven by me. Yeah. I just get other people in to share totally different things I have no idea about. Like you with your world cycle, like I have no idea about that kind of stuff.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no worries, and check it out.
The links for that will be in the descriptions as well.
Yes, it's going really well so far, and people have been really receptive to being on it, and people seem to really like the actual podcast, and it's like it's more low key than like your traditional story time video, I guess, because they'd be real hype and high energy and really
like, oh my God, you'll believe what he did,
like, yeah. Oh my God, I got robbed, but yeah. He didn't really though, like, you know,
yeah.
You find
someone looked
at
you funny, yeah.
But whereas the story time podcast, it is long form and it does have a very high watch time, like people do really watch, and that's the great thing about YouTube Analytics, you can figure that out, people do really watch quite a lot of it, but it lets people tell some really interesting stories. So I've had, and I've also met like I've met you through it, like, and I've met people I never would have met otherwise because I wouldn't be collabing with them to make a sketch, do you know what I mean? So one of, just because we mentioned my repeal jumper, one of the episodes I loved the most was a woman named Nicola O'Leary came onto my podcast to talk about her abortion story and why she got one and when she got one and like how it came about and stuff. And I really enjoyed that because I just really thought it was a really interesting story, and it was a couple of months ago, and I just felt like as well that there wasn't enough people just telling their story and being like, listen, you know, I got an abortion and this is why, and this happened, like, and in particular I really liked Nicola's story because she didn't, it was basically the wrong time for her in her life and stuff, and she was in college, and it wasn't to do with health, or it wasn't to do with, you know what I mean, so it was kind of the kind of story that normally people would be very wary about. They'd be like, oh, you just, you know, because it didn't suit you or whatever, and I was worried she was going to get very negative feedback, but she didn't, and she got amazing feedback, and I was just really happy with the episode. And then of course I've got episodes where like we just talk about drinking stories and like our worst blackout stories, you know what I mean, so it goes from like
that
really
works too.
Really lighthearted to like I've had a few really serious ones, so I really like the scope of it.
I do finish the podcast, and as an avid listener, of course, you know what the last question is. What's the security code and your well, I finish the show every week with simple question, and that's if someone's watching this on my channel and it's completely new to you, or even if they've seen you before and haven't subscribed or know nothing about you other than the viral videos they've seen, if you'd one thing to ask of them, what would it be?
Ooh, that's a good
Doesn't
question.
Doesn't necessarily have to help you, but if you had one thing to ask them to do, what would it be?
I guess just check me out and have a look online, and leave a like if you like it. I don't know. That's probably what I'd say. Maybe check out the Storytime podcast because it's my baby now at the moment, and I'm mad to get people listening to that. Actually, there you go. That's what we'll do. We'll say, check out the episode of you on the Storytime podcast.
They're sick of listening to
me. That's how they can help
me.
Check out the episode of you on the Storytime podcast.
Oh, much better things to be doing with their time. No, seriously, check it out. So listen, thank you very much for hosting me in your lovely little studio, which is way smaller than I thought it looked online.
I do love it. it looks a lot bigger.
It looks great though. So thanks for having me, and
thank you for having
best of luck with story time and everything that you've got cooked up with yourself for the next whatever, and best luck with
you
your
too,
wedding
and thank
everything.
You very much. Yeah, woohoo.